You don't know what a liar Ricky is, don't you? I've been in his state. I've drank in his state. I've drank in California. I don't find any difference. I've drank in most every state in the Union. I still didn't find any difference. But I'll tell you one thing, it's sure great to be sober in California. Can you beat that? My name is Bart Stonebreaker. And I am from Washington, D.C., and if you like or you don't like what's going on over there, I have nothing to do with it. I got a little throat trouble, and I hope you can hear me back there, and you're better off if you can. Well, I was sitting over here in a condemned cell waiting for the warden. I made the finest and clearest explanation of the ninth step that you have ever known. Now, what is going to come out? Well, your guess is as good as mine. I'm one of these, you've heard the drunks described here as jail and sanitariums. I didn't hit that route yet. I was saved on the brink. I'm one of those that came in, and I just had a few friends left, but I was rapidly losing them. I hadn't lost my wife, I hadn't lost my home, I hadn't lost my business. But it wouldn't have taken many more days or weeks or months until that was all gone. It was just right on the brink, leaning way over. But I really don't think, and I've discussed this, I don't think there's an awful lot of difference. Maybe, I don't know, it's those things you can't prove. But when I reach my point of personal despair, I don't know whether the boys down on Skid Row's torture was any worse than mine, because mine was all I could bear, and thank God Alcoholics Anonymous came along and brought me in the wrong way. I didn't ask for it, I didn't want it. I had a very fine, wise sponsor that literally took me by the nap of the neck and says, come on, this is good for you. And I went out of curiosity, and thank God I've been here ever since. That was about 9 years ago. After my first two meetings, which I attended very electrified, and I'm dying the next day waiting for a miracle AA doctor whom I thought was going to magically make me well, and he didn't, I read these steps for the first time. Well, that first one made a little sense to me, because I had done, violated that many, many times in my life. But as I went on down here, and I'm shaking and trembling, and I read this eighth and ninth step, and incidentally, you certainly helped me out on the ninth step on your explanation of the eighth. I read those two, and I said, that's the silliest doggone thing I ever heard of. Imagine in passion. Confessing to all the sins and people they'd harmed. Well, I've been a good boy all my life. I've drank whiskey ever since I was 6 years old. But I never hurt anybody. And I honestly didn't think I had. I couldn't remember anybody at all. What I mean by harm. So I went along. Attended meetings like my wise sponsor told me. And I'm also one of them that she told me this. I had a very beautiful lady for a sponsor. I was of that school take the steps in whatever order they make sense to you and whenever you want them or feel the need of them or they make sense. My mind doesn't work in rotation to take 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know in what order I skipped around on. I attended many meetings where in Washington We take the steps in rotation each Friday night at our closed meetings, the group I belong to. So I'd hit these steps, and gradually some of them began to make sense to me. I don't know exactly when it was, but somewhere in a year, 2 years, sobriety, I was at a closed meeting and this ninth step was being discussed. And I still, up to that time, hadn't figured out or known of anybody I'd harmed and didn't know if there was any reason to do anything about it. All of a sudden, it hit me that night that I was the guy on number one on the list. The errors of omission and commission that I had committed with almost a lifetime of drinking. I had my first drink in kindergarten in St. Louis, Missouri, out in an alley. There it was nostalgic to go back there in 55 and see where that occurred. The alley was still there. But at this night, it hit me that Bar Stonebreaker was the worst one on the list there, and that I had, by this continued drinking and actions that had been caused by drinking, I had hurt him. Okay, what do I do about it? I'm sober. I'm beginning to like it very, very much. In fact, maybe about that time, I don't know exactly when it occurred, but I know it must have been somewhere along there, or maybe it was earlier, about that time. I arrived at a stage where I wanted sobriety more than anything else in the world, and I still want it. And I think as long as I feel that way, I can't lose on this program. So then, Barsh got sober. His way of thinking changed. He began to lose his arrogance. I was an arrogant drinker. I was very proud of my drinking. I could drink anybody under the table. I've drank between Dallas and Fort Worth and I don't know that there's rivalry down there, you know, but there's no difference in Dallas or Fort Worth where you're drinking. But I said I was an arrogant drinker. I was proud of my ability. Well, now I'm just as proud to myself of my ability to stay sober. Nobody's going to take it away from me if I can keep from it. I know nobody's going to take it away from me except me. If I choose to give it up. But then when I got sober, what happens then? For this change of life, way of thinking, I then realized that, well, certainly, here is my loved ones around me. My mother, my wife, my sister. Those are the ones by the constant heartaches that I have caused them. Lights on, huh? Okay. By the constant worry that I had caused them, there were the people I had harmed. Now then, what do I do about it? I stay sober, I live a good life. I'm making amends to them for the sorrows and the heartaches that I have caused them. If our loved ones are gone, some of them, there's nothing actually concretely we can do on earth. But I believe that upstairs, they know the way we're living. Don't worry about this ninth step and try to create something about it. I'm telling you what to do. You can do it whether you want to or not. It's just the way I feel about it. Don't create a mountain out of a molehill. Don't try to do the impossible. Like, how could he correct, make amends years ago when he blew up the wrong dock? Maybe you don't know that, but he was commissioned to go down and blow up a dock down on the Gulf, and he blew up the wrong dock. So, don't worry about it. Take your time. Take it easy. It takes judgment, discretion, and time to live this step, in my opinion. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you ever so much, Boris. I tried to find out about this next character. I thought I'd been knowing Charlie for a long time, and this is the first time I ever met his wife. They're on the way to Honolulu afterwards, and I'm very jealous of them. So I asked her if she'd mind telling me a little something about this character. She says, I don't know, but says, do you know what the true definition of frustration is? I said, I don't know why. I said, well, he was really frustrated when he came into AA. I said, what is the true definition? Says, that of a sterile rabbit. I give you Charlie.
Thank you, Iggy. Well, my name is Robbie Robinson. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. The fact that I'm standing here today to speak upon the 10th step does not in any way signify the fact that I am an expert on this 10th step. I should be. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous pretty close to 12 years ago, and I expect I have made all the mistakes that there are in the book, and I have to take this 10th step not only once a day, but several times every day, and I have to admit those mistakes. So if practice makes perfect, and if experience means anything, I should be an expert. But the fact that I have not improved one damn bit over what I was when I started leads me to believe that I don't know too much about it yet. In this 10th step, we continue to take a moral inventory, and when we are wrong, to properly admit it. Now, of course, this is an inventory step, and actually we go associated immediately with the 4th step, which is also one. And I remember this when I first came to AA, I thought that probably the 10th step was simply an addition put in the 12 steps to lay emphasis upon the importance of the 4th. But as I've been around here quite a while and I've continued making mistakes, after inventory, I find out that this 10th step plays an entirely separate and distinct part in this program. The 4th step, in my opinion, is a step wherein we clean up the old mess of our lives. But in this 10th step is one where we go ahead and take care of our present mistakes. And we still make them. I like to think of in my work in these moral inventory steps, I like to go ahead and compare it to the moving into an old house that has been unoccupied for a long time. Why, the previous tenant was slovenly, careless, dirty, even filthy. And why, when we move into that house in the 4th step, we have to clean out all this debris, all the old broken bottles, all the old furniture, clean out all the mess, wash the windows so that we can see outside of ourselves into the world outside. Why, we can put on a little spit and polish on the building and make it fit to live in. Then we are ready to move in. That, I believe, is what the function we perform when we take the 4th step. But, with all the care that we may take, after we get that house nice and clean and we have moved in, new dirt and new dust will accumulate. And therefore, it requires eternal vigilance on the part of whoever is doing the housekeeping to see that that dust does not continue to accumulate until it becomes dirt again, until we are no longer fit to live in our own house with. Because when that happens, we know what always does happen. Now, there are many types of dirt that can come into our new house. And it comes certainly into my life and on many, many occasions, and I'm afraid it does for some of the others. In that 4th step, we have eliminated, or we hope we have, all of that old false pride we had. But we've never developed a new sense of pride, what we call justifiable pride. We have gotten sober. We are hot stuff again. People are patting us on our backs, telling us what a good job we're doing. We've got a string of pigeons lead all the way from here to the liquor store. We've become important to other people, and we begin becoming important to ourselves again. We forget the fact that when a little shot becomes a big shot, he winds up half shot. That invariably happens. We forget that we are what we are by the grace of God and by the grace of God only. That is some of the dust that has come into my house and come into it quite often. It requires a daily application of this tenth step to keep it under control. Then there's some other things, too, that come in. We alcoholics think when we come in here in AA, to get ourselves all holy, to get ourselves our new halo, begin to go in and feel where we're sprouting our wings, that we've gotten rid of all of our intolerance. And that was just as crazy in my case as it could be. I thought that. I thought I loved everybody. That I was at peace and harmony with everybody. And yet, I had a half a dozen guys in my group. They were staying sober, not my way, but their own way. And I was intolerant as hell about that. I didn't like it. And then I found there were a lot of people who were also working with alcoholics. And they didn't have the batting average we had. They were lucky if they had 1% or 2% recoveries. And I began to think, well, these people don't know what they're doing. And I became a little bit intolerant of those people, forgetting the fact that they have to work with only what God Almighty has given them to work with. But that we are very fortunate people in that we have been given tools over and beyond that given to other sources. We have the faculty to reach within the drunk and to find that understanding and that sympathy and that cooperation that enables us to get places where people who exceed us in education, in ability, and in intelligence can do as well. Because we have been selected out of the world of people by God Almighty, in my opinion, to perform one specific purpose, and that is to carry the message to alcoholics. And that was done because of the fact that we, in our experience in our many years of drunken torture, have been able to go ahead and learn those invaluable lessons which enable us to go ahead and speak to a drunk in a drunk's own language, wherein he can understand us, where we can understand him. And so we sometimes become very much intolerant of the doctors, of the judges, and of other people who are working in with the ministry. We feel that they're not doing a big job. And we become very intolerant. And then another thing, too, that I think was some more dust that accumulates in our house. We've gotten rid of that old greed for that old insatiable appetite for more whiskey and more whiskey and more whiskey. But others have crept in. We have become entirely too anxious to do everything for yesterday. We're sober. Now, if I'm the devil, can't I've been sober for a week. Why can't I have the $15,000 job that other sober people have? Giving no thought to our abilities or our capabilities. We want all things that come to all sober people, and we want them right now. We still have the old drunken characteristic of the immature child. We want what we want. We want it now, and if we don't get it, we're going to cry like hell. Sometimes we go ahead and get very get full of self-pity, and we get ourselves very much fouled up in our thinking. Ruin us our own happiness, certainly ruin our frame of mind, and ruin our effectiveness in the work. Then I think, too, there's another set of dirt that comes into all of us, certainly has in mind, and that is a return of arrogance. By the grace of the good wife, who for years has been running the household, has been raising the children, she has been doing all the educating, all the discipline, she's taken care of all the bills, she's lied to our employers, made excuses why we didn't come to work. And we've been sober 3 days now, we begin to smell like a human being, and we move back into our house and take over. Everything the children do is wrong, and we're inclined to go ahead and be very, very emphatic about that. The wife can't do anything right. Nobody knows anything except us. There's hot stuff again. That's certain also that can come into our lives. It can soon make our house unfit to live in. Now this tenth step, in my opinion, wherein we daily, and I mean daily, several times daily if necessary, go through that house cleaning chore of keeping our house in order. This tenth step to me is a dust cloth in which I go over my house every day, because I've got to keep me fit to live with. This place that I reside in has got to be clean. If I don't, I'm going to retire to the other filth that I had before. This I know. So I have to me, with all the mistakes that I have made in this program, and with all the mistakes that I'm still making every day, I know that for me, I cannot stay sober, except by daily application and a frequent application and a thorough application for this 10th step of Alcoholics Anonymous, wherein I go ahead and continue to take immoral inventory. When I am wrong, promptly admit it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next speaker this morning, I think we're really privileged to be here with. He's accumulated the wonderful little book, 24 Hours a Day, which so many of us are so grateful. And in recognition to him, I'd like to read July the 1st, AA Thought for the Day. It's wonderful. And following the AA program with its 12 steps, we have the advantage of a better understanding of our problem. Day after day, our sobriety results in the formation of new habits, normal habits. As each 24 hours period ends, we find that the business of staying sober is a much less trying and fearsome ordeal than it seemed in the beginning. Do I find it easier as I go along? This book has helped all of us. It's a deep, sincere pleasure to get to be on the program with Richard.
Thank you very much, Ricky. The 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Having accepted the fact that we were powerless over alcohol in the first step, and having come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity in the second step, and having turned our will and our lives over to the care of God in the third step, and having got rid of some of our defects of character, which were blocking us off from God, we are now ready in the 11th step to try to improve our conscious contact with God. How can we do this? In the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, we read, quote, "We cannot get along without prayer and meditation. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. Our thought lives will be placed on a much higher plane when we start the day with prayer and meditation. We conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we will be shown throughout the day what our next step is to be. The basis of all our prayers is, Thy will be done in me and through me today." End quote. The suggestion is here that we start each day with prayer and meditation to get our minds in the right condition for the day. I think this is very important. If we start the day right, the day is much more apt to go right. I have a quiet time every morning before breakfast, and I read a little and I pray a little, and I ask God for the strength to do the right thing today. Now, St. Paul said we are transformed by the renewing of our minds. We have to keep our minds in the right condition one day at a time. You've often heard it said, the length of our sobriety is not as important as the quality of it. It isn't how long you've been in AA, it's how are you thinking today? That's the big question. How am I thinking today? To think right, we have to try to improve our conscious contact with that great intelligence in the universe which we call God, that intelligence from which our own intelligence stems. We have some of this intelligence in ourselves, and we also have free will. We can choose the bad or the good, and if we choose the good, we can express it in our daily lives. Now, how can we know God's will? I think that all we can do is try to follow the dictates of our conscience as we go along, to try to do the good thing, the right thing, and leave the results to God. I say, "Thy will be done," often during the day, because it helps me to face whatever I have to face. Now, I believe that we don't get the full benefit of the AA program until we have turned our lives over to the care of God. And trusted that higher power for the strength to face life as we should face it. We have proved by our past lives that we could not live without faith. We were at sea without a rudder to guide us or an anchor to hold us, drifting on the sea of life, wayfarers without a home. Our souls are restless until they rest in God. And when we have surrendered our lives to a higher power, we are at home and at rest and at peace. We in AA believe that we have recovered through the grace of God. But for the grace of God, I might be drinking today. And there is grace in this 11th step, which is the influence of God operating in man to regenerate him and to strengthen him. And if we are convinced that we have recovered through the grace of God, I think we should be very grateful and very humble and try to live in all respects the way we believe that higher power wants us to live. And finally, when we say the Lord's Prayer at the end of every meeting, we are not praying into a vacuum. That great intelligence is there, similar to our own, and from whence our own came. And we can pray with confidence that that great intelligence will see to it that we will have everything that we need for our own good, provided we are doing our best day by day to improve our conscious contact with Him, as is suggested in this 11th step.
The 12th step. I'm going to ask you to share with me a few seconds of silent meditation in memory of a man who's known throughout the world as the 12th stepper. This is a wire that I received from Akron, Ohio in 1950, November the 17th, 7:30. The funeral will be at Monday at 1 o'clock, St. Paul's Episcopal Church. Our only love, Dr. Bob. Will you bow in memory of the real, sure enough, 12 steps? Thank you. Our next friend is from Canada. I'm just as anxious to hear what Jim's got to say as he does. I never have heard Jim talk, but I'm looking forward to him talking about the 12 steps. Jim?
Uh, I've moved a long ways from home in the last few seconds. I'm Jim Lewis from Spartanburg, South Carolina. Folks, it's wonderful to be here. It's a wonderful experience to be on this program. It wasn't planned that way, and it did a hell of a lot to my humility, too. You know, to get to speak on a program like this and not get your name on the program is something. And last night about 9 o'clock, I was called to come and speak to you this morning on the 12th step. I'm not prepared to speak on this step, and I don't think any living human is prepared to speak on it in its entirety. The step, to me, was my salvation. Because when I came into AA, it was my last chance. I had been on a bender for 10 years, never sober for one moment. I can remember very clearly how the seed was planted. And since that day, I can look at me and see all the mistakes that I've made that my sponsor didn't make. So today I'd like to talk to you for a few moments about AA, the 12 steps, and sponsorship. This 12th step, to me, is a great responsibility. I was laying in the hospital, having my hemorrhoids removed for the third time in order to get sober. And a big, tall guy walking up and down the hall, his sponsor was across the hall with a heart attack, saw my door open, and he walked in. Where the words came from, I do not know. But that day, when he walked in the room, I says, "Claire, you look good." He says, "Hell, I ought to. I've been sober 5 years." He proceeded to tell me his story, what had happened to him, about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what was going on. It went in one ear and out the other. A year and a month later, in desperation, when money and friendship, all the strings I could pull, couldn't even get medical attention, the thought of what he said popped into my mind. When it did, I asked my wife to call Claire. She says, "No, Jim, you call Claire. I'll dial the number if you can't see it." And I did. In a matter of 15 minutes, Claire was there. And with what he had to work with, he did a pretty good job. Because 6 years and 5 months ago, that happened. 6 months ago. Time doesn't mean anything anymore. But he planted a seed, and he was a good farmer. I haven't achieved that ability yet. I'd like to share some of my experiences. I've even got scars from 12-step calls. You know, I've tried to cram it down their throat. I've tried to help them eat by putting their false teeth in and got bit. I've done a little bit of everything to get a man sober and to stay sober for him, forgetting all the time that only a power greater than I can help. I sincerely hope that through this program and the application of it, that someday I can truly take all 12 of these steps and be a good farmer, like God intended for all of us to be. We have a message, surely we have a message, and it's supposed to be carried, it's not supposed to be sought out. The amazing thing this morning is I've heard each speaker speak, most of them didn't just get this thing. They didn't read about it in Saturday Union Post, and they didn't pick it up out of the newspaper. It was kind of forced on them or brought to them, or in desperation they reached out. But somebody carried that message. And all through the AA literature you find, carry the message. To me, that's important. So having had a spiritual awakening, having had a contact with God, we are supposed to have gained a little bit of serenity, a little bit of soberness. Soberness means clear, calm, unclouded thinking. And when we look back and think and can't remember what happened when we got sober. If I look back, it was that quiet approach, that man planting the seed, that enabled me to get sober a year later. We often question ourselves. We didn't do much for old Bill or Joe. Who are we to judge what we did? If we told them an honest story, carried the message as we know it, in a sincere, humble way, that seed can't help but come up, because that's one of God's seeds, and it'll surely rise. As I look at this program daily, work at it daily, I require a lot of this program. I'm an egotistical drunk, very arrogant one. I didn't lose everything to come in AA. I just lost my self-respect. That's all. I didn't lose business. I didn't lose wife. I didn't lose home. I lost my self-respect and faith in God. And those are two important things, I think, to all men. I gained a little bit of my self-respect by just staying sober. I gained a little faith in God by asking for help one day at a time. And when occasions arise like this one, I'm never alone. I have you, and I have God. But first I had to have you. That doesn't seem right. But when we look at that in its true light, God was working through you. So I'll tell you a little experience that I had at the end of 9 months. Close this deal out. After being in AA for 9 months and being an eager beaver, I tried to sober up my hometown. I worked on a lot of people. At the end of 9 months, nobody was sober, and Jim was desperate. A little Episcopal rector who came to see me for 3 years, and I wasn't a member of his church, and he always told me I was sick. I never heard him say a prayer. I never heard him read a piece of scripture. He told me I was sick. He knew that first things had to come first. But when I came into AA, he called me up one day and told me, says, Jim, if you have any trouble with the spiritual side of the program, he says, come talk it over with him. So after 9 months, one morning I called him. And I was pretty desperate. My last pigeon had just got drunk. I couldn't go into a meeting and see a single one there that was sober. And I went over to the club with him and got in the far corner of the table, and I was going to tell him all about poor me. And just what had happened. And instead of that, he being an old athletic director and football coach, he told me about it was in September, the outgoing baseball season and who was going to play in the World Series and the incoming football season and who was going to have the best new players. And I got rather disgusted with him, and I made some excuses and told him I'd have to get back to my office. And when I did, I was fine. And when we got in front of the parish house, he says, by the way, Jim, he says, the question you wanted to ask me is just this. You have prayed too long, too often, and too much for things. He says, you're way behind with saying thank you, God. He says, take time out tonight to be grateful if you're sober and say thank you. Not whether you made $1 million or had a good day or didn't make anybody mad. He says, in your particular case, if you've been sober today, in its true sense, you've got a lot to be thankful for. And then he says one other prayer. He says, when you get up in the morning, he says, don't try to walk alone today. Ask God to give you the strength and the wisdom to stay sober that day if it's his will. He says, that's number two. But he says, now this third prayer, and this is all I'm going to ask you to do for the time being, because he says it's going to take a long time for you to get back where you ought to be. He says, you're not going to like it, because he says, you're too egotistical. He says, the next time you make a 12-step call, he says, take a few seconds out and ask God to go with you. And if he goes with you, you can't fail. He says, learn to be a good farmer. He says, all good farmers depend on God for everything to nurture every seed that they plant. To me, this program gives me a chance to mature and learn to love my God, as I understand it. These 12 steps are miraculous. They've brought a man from nowhere to somewhere, and although he's frustrated when he gets there, he'll reach out and ask. He's got a partner. They'll help him all the time. Thank you.
Sure enjoyed that. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you here in behalf of the wonderful, wonderful 12 speakers that we had here today. We only ran over 6 minutes, which is remarkable for 12 drunks. Let's give them a great big hand. Start of an AA meeting for 3 days, folks, we're going to be in heaven before Sunday night. I never felt as good in my life, and I just thank each and every one of you for the wonderful audience that you've been. You've been so attentive and good to each and every one of us, and there's only one way that I could thank you, and this is what we've learned in AA. It's a child's prayer, but it suits me. And it says, we thank thee now, dear Lord, for home and friends and food. And may we live this day to show our gratitude. Will you please stand and be dismissed with the Lord's Prayer? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.